Good evening. This is Mark Lynch.
And this is Inquiry. My returning guest tonight, it's always a pleasure to talk to her, is Heidi E.Y. Stempel, prolific writer, who has published almost 50 books and numerous short stories and poems, mostly for young readers. But tonight, we're talking about her new book, her latest, Snowy Owl Rescue, Raptor Recovery. Heidi, welcome back to the show. It is always a pleasure to talk to you about your new book, whatever that may be.
You like it best when it's about a bird.
Well, no. That's, well, maybe a little bit.
Shame. There's no shame in that. Birds are our favorite things.
Well, I think anything in natural history will turn me on.
Agreed.
Yeah. Like we were just talking about bobcats. I mean, come on. How can you
love
not?
Love them too.
Snowy Owl Rescue, Raptor Recovery. The thing I love about this, besides the story itself, which is very cool, is that it's going to be the part of a series. Have you? You've never done a series before, have you?
I've done a series, but they're usually fairly unconnected. So I have a series of books about history that I wrote with my mom, author Jane Yolen.
Right.
Back in the early, 2000s.
Oy.
I mean, does that make me so old?
Hey, don't even start that when you're talking to me.
I know, right?
Right.
So we did the Unsolved Mysteries from History series. But we also have hopefully there will be a third book, series of poems about animals.
Oh.
So we have Yuck You Suck and Eek You Reek. I'm working on a third right now, so hopefully that's a series. But those are very different because they're not characters that come through the series, where this is
right.
Very much a series that starts when the characters meet, and then it brings those characters into different situations, and actually in the third book, even to another place. So the characters are Michael, who is a soccer
player. I want to talk to you in each. Mm-hmm. Michael's sort of this interesting, what grade is he in? And by the way, I want to mention, these are for older readers.
Yes, these are short middle grade novels.
Right.
So they started out sort of as a chapter book series, but we decided early on that we wanted a little more action, we wanted a little more depth. So they moved into the space of middle grade novel, and it's short, about 20,000 words, I think. So easily accessible to readers who are new to novels. The goal was to have them exciting on page one.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that I have.
And there's excitement as you go along. And different kinds of excitement too,
yeah.
And it really is a young, not quite young adult, but it's older reader, and it does give you the novel experience. So there's Michael. Michael's a soccer player, or football, as the rest of the world calls it. Now, how would you describe his personality?
He is beloved by all. He is the soccer star, along with I think the goalie, whose name is Addison. He is being raised by parents who are very very high-achieving parents. His mom was an Olympic soccer star, and she's now the coach.
Whoops.
And his dad is a professor. They live in New Jersey, and the dad teaches at a New York City college. And he's very, very concentrated on soccer.
hasn't had a lot of different input.
No, but he's lovely.
He's open.
He's the kid everybody likes. Like nobody dislikes him. But he's very focused on soccer. And he goes to play to practice behind the school.
And he has a weird experience. Let's not give away too much of the book. We'll give away some of it.
Let's just say that he meets the kid who will become his best friend.
By the way, Jet, I think, is the coolest character in the world.
Jet is everyone's favorite character.
She's a fourth grader.
Yes, so these kids are in fifth and fourth grade. And Jet is a birder. Jet is a bird nerd. Jet will tell you absolutely everything about every bird. We all know this kid.
Oh, I know that kid.
And in fact, when my niece Ari read the book for me early on, Ari said to me, "Auntie Heidi, Jet's me, right?" I said, "Jet is 100% you, Ari. They are absolutely you."
I love it. She's just so on top of it. I mean, she's cool beyond your years.
We're gonna use the they pronoun, please.
Right, they them. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. But they them are mm-hmm. cool beyond their years.
Yeah. So one of the hard things in writing a novel is getting enough, especially this. I love the fact that kids will read this and get wonderful knowledge, but you don't want that sort of info dump to come from an adult. You don't want it to come from the author. You never want to hear the author.
No, because that'll be a teacher or a parent.
Exactly. You don't want the parent to say, "Oh, by the way, let me tell you about snowy owls. This is where they live." And this, but Jet, because Jet is a bird nerd, they are in charge of all the info dump in this entire book. So there's a lot of information being given about birds. The reader is getting a lot of information, but it's so authentically Jet who is giving this information that Michael is a little overwhelmed at first.
Oh, yeah.
And he has to figure out how to sort of work with, become a team with. Remember, team is his experience with this kid who he thinks first is a little weird, but really comes to understand Jet and really adore Jet. And they are together with this team in all of the books. So I'm really excited.
I'm excited about that. As long as Jet's in there, that's cool.
Yes, Jet is totally.
Now, did you get Jet's name from the Paul McCartney song?
No, I don't know. I don't actually know where names come from usually.
What? You're the author.
I know, but the characters sort of let me know who they are. So Michael is Michael Robinson Katz. Michael Robinson is the son, that's the name of the son of the original editor of this book.
Oh.
So I take names from a lot of different places. Jet's last name is Carlson. One of my family's a parent and child who read it and gave me notes, their last name is Carlson. So I take names from all sorts of different places. Anyone who helped me with the book winds up as a minor or major character in the book. And that's just sort of the way I always do things. But Jet's name just showed up. I don't know.
Why is it in New Jersey and not, you know, in the valley or something like that?
The proximity to the city made sense to me.
Okay.
Where were people commuting to New York? Because here's the there are two things that need to happen for an child adventure story, right?
Okay.
Number one, you have to get rid of the parents. Right? Because otherwise the parents are just going to solve things. So how did the kids get to have an adventure if their parents are right there with them?
Now that you said that, otherwise it sounded very dark. They have to get rid of their parents.
Well, I mean, we joke a lot in children's books about kill the mother, start the action. But I didn't want to do that, obviously. I know. That is an actual thing. Think about it. Think of the books that you read as a kid and loved.
Okay.
They're almost always orphans of some ilk.
Ilk.
But the secondary thing you need to do is get rid of the cell phone.
Oh, got it.
Right?
Yeah.
Let that sink in. Because kids, so a lot of books we're seeing now, a lot of novels are being set back into the 1980s or the 1960s. Because kids today, if this happened and these kids had a cell phone right with them, they would have called for help.
Right.
There would have been no adventure.
Or they would have Googled. They would have Googled it and then found out what to do. And this way they had to figure it out themselves.
Exactly. And that's good for real life. But in a book, that really stops it. So I have to make sure that I can get rid of the parents and the – I know, terrible, right? And the cell phone in all of the books.
You know, all of this makes tremendous sense to me once you say this. I just take, you know, I'm reading it and I'm going like, wow, okay, cool. And I just sort of follow along and never question anything. Now, there's two more characters I want to talk to you about.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Kamala Jefferson.
Yep. Can you guess where I got her name from?
I wonder. but she's a doctor of veterinary medicine. And mm-hmm. she's really, I would say she's probably the ultimate hero of the book.
Yeah, she is the adult who finally steps in at the last possible minute that they are able to relinquish their the adventure to Dr. Jeff.
Okay. And she's right? also a very cool person too, and very calm.
Yes, and Jet has been working with her for a while.
Yeah.
So she was sort of the ultimate goal of where the kids needed to get this adventure between the beginning and the end. She was always the goal. Like, get this bird there and we'll be okay. But I had to put in a lot of things in between that. Too.
And one of them is Colin Clark. yeah, but you needed Colin Clark.
You need a bad guy.
What's the story with Colin Clark? Why is he such an asshole? I mean, dangerous asshole. I mean, he almost knocked them off their little...
Their scooter.
Yeah.
Well, here's the thing, right? You need some bumps in the road. And
literally. Literally and figuratively.
Yeah, exactly. He turns out to be a jerk. He's actually more of an interesting character than just saying that he's the bully or the jerk, right? Because he was the guy who Michael looked up to for a lot of his qualities. And I'll let that little bit be for the readers to really see. But more so than the actual peril that he puts them in is the fact that Michael is coming to terms with how what his relationship with Jet is.
Right.
Is he protecting Jet because Jet's younger? Are they, you know, the two of them together? And how can he sort of get rid of Jet once this is done?
Mm.
Right? So there's actually a lot of pieces that Colin sort of helps become a catalyst.
Is he going to be in the other books?
No, absolutely not.
No? I was hoping he was going to have some sort of, like, epiphany and turn out to be an okay person.
No, you know what? We actually, I think, I was listening to Lauren Wolk, an amazing author, talk about an absolutely unredeemed character in one of her novels.
Oh, whoa.
And she said, you know, I thought, well, do we redeem this character? Do we let her become, you know, good in the end? And you know what? Frankly, that's not always the case for these kids, right?
Yeah.
For some people, you just need to realize, look, I don't need that negativity in my life.
Right. You leave them behind.
It's not important to be nice with every person. It's important to be nice to people, but it's not important to be friends with everybody. Friendly? Sure. But some people, though they may be best friends with lots of other people, may just not be your people.
Huh.
And that's kind of okay, right?
Don't ask me for validation to your wicked plans.
Well, I mean, I think we know that as adults, but
I know you, but you do want you. For some reason, there's a knee-jerk reaction you have that when you have somebody that's that much of a jerk, that they're going to have a comeuppance or they're going to turn out something will change their life and their streak. But you're right. It doesn't happen in real life. So, and they become a lot of adults, you know. I wanted to ask you, though, was he based on anybody that you know? And you don't have to mention their name, but that would be great. But
he was actually not. He was actually based a little more on the soccer player. I can't remember his name, which might be. I had to move it away from his name, but I think it's still pretty close in Ted Lasso. All of whom were redeemed, right?
Right.
I didn't let that happen here. But yeah, I was thinking, okay, what is an aggressive, not nice kind of bully soccer person look like to me? And that's sort of my where I look at it. Also, I know nothing about soccer. I don't know why I keep doing this to myself. So I wrote the entire book and then sent it to my friend Jamie, who is a soccer mom and a soccer coach, and she plays soccer. She knows about soccer, and she has a group of soccer friends. So she goes through all of the soccer pieces of these books for me and says, Heidi, that doesn't make any sense. So she helps me figure out how to make it make sense.
Oh, that's cool.
Really fun. Because each of the books start with a little bit of soccer.
Each of them?
Yep.
Wow. So you... And then there's Martine.
Martine. I love Martine.
Yeah, I do too.
Martine might be more like me. Somebody asked me, who are you more like?
I thought so. I had a feeling.
I'm afraid it's somewhere between Martine and Jet. Martine is sort of the third in the Avian Adventurers, which begins the book as the bird watching club, right?
Mm.
And she is homeschooled because she is super anxious. And here's about, now, I was not homeschooled, but I do have a considerable amount of anxiety. And I wanted someday to write about that.
Yep.
And what I found was it was so much harder than I thought it would be, because I'm like, well, unlike soccer, I know about social anxiety.
Right.
Like, I suffer from this. But it is so internal. How do you write about it? And in the second book, she becomes a little more of a character who we flesh out a little bit. But writing of that was sort of cathartic, but also really difficult.
Hmm. Why?
Well, because first of all, because it's so internal.
You know, and it's also relating to
nobody's,
you?
Nobody's anxiety is the same or looks the same.
Right.
So I didn't want to make it just sort of like the classic, this is what anxiety looks like. Because for most people wouldn't know that I have anxiety because it's all internal. So I wanted Martine to be able to feel real to more than one person's experience of anxiety. And repeatedly in the next books, Martine really has a small but pivotal role where she has to, though anxious, do something out of her comfort zone, which I think people with anxiety are every day we have to do that. And so I wanted to sort of put voice to that a little bit. And the goal is not to do it in a didactic way, right? To do it in a way that feels authentic to those characters that you're building.
She's also sort of got mad tinkering skills.
Yeah, which is so fun. So she's the one who works in her dad's studio, or they have a garage where they have all this work stuff. So in the first book, she's always creating things that sort of work. In the first book, it's the electric scooter, which I watched more videos on how to create electric scooters, and it was hilarious.
But it was great up until a point. Didn't it not have brakes?
No brakes.
Okay, great.
Again, you know, no cell phones, no parents, no breaks.
You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. My returning guest tonight, always a pleasure to talk to her, is Heidi E.Y. Stempel, prolific writer who's published almost 50 books, numerous short stories and poems, mostly for young readers. And tonight we've been talking about her latest, which is the start of a series, Snowy Owl Rescue, Raptor Research. Now, this is one of the big points in the book. They can't decide on a name what this club, which initially only has two people in it, is going to be. And there's some great names suggested along the way. But yeah, they decide on the Avian Adventurers.
Michael is very irritated by the fact that he is being asked to join the birdwatching club. He thinks it needs better press than that. So he goes about trying to suggest names to Jet about much more exciting names. So that's sort of a running gag in this first book, which I really enjoyed writing because some of the names are really silly.
Now, there's a real serious thing that's also – there's a message in this book too. And I know it's something you feel very strongly about rodenticides, because the snowy owl – ends up eating a rat that somebody had poisoned. And I don't think people understand when you let out, when you set out rat poison, how it filters down through the ecosystem. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, this is my, this is the hill I am prepared to die on. Each of these books does have something, a lesson, a call to action, something that I know kids reading this book will probably be exposed to for the first time. The second one has to do with what has to do with habitat destruction. So this one, what Dr. Jeff says in the end is people don't know. They're not doing this on purpose. People don't know.
Right.
So rodenticide is it's an anticoagulant, which means it doesn't allow the blood to build clots, which we need. And people poison rodents, mice, rats, whatever, because it is more pleasant for humans not to have to see dead things or not to have to kill things. So a while ago, I don't know how many years ago, they developed this anticoagulant poison where you can put it out, mice or rats come eat it, leave the bait station, go out into the world and die elsewhere. They're not dying in your house. How wonderful is that? You never have to be that close to dead nature. However, that anticoagulant that is in the mouse or any kind of rodent's body, a rat, is still in the body. That becomes a prey animal because an injured or sick animal is an easy prey animal, and all of the other second-tier or third-tier predators will come down and eat that. There was just a case of a mountain lion.
I believe. I saw that.
That was in the news that had this poison in their bodies. Now, there's lots of legislation. We are not able to go to Home Depot and buy the strongest of the anticoagulant poisons anymore. Rodenticide has, there have been some sort of light rules created around it. That is not the case for professionals. Professionals still are able to use this type of poison. And they have been known, I don't want to malign the entire industry because there are tons of rodent and pest control companies that are have stopped using these. But I do know people who have said, well, the pest control people came and said, they said it's fine. It would take a lot of this poison to kill the raptors, which is not true. And almost 100% of all raptors in the state of Massachusetts, where there was a study done of the ones that died, almost 100% in many species, it's 100%. I think the lowest was in like red-tailed hawks. It was 80%. I don't know which raptor it was. They have this poison in them. I was in Plymouth at a conference 2 weeks ago, and there was an open bait box right on the sidewalk outside of somebody's business. So this is being used every day. This does not just kill raptors or, you know, prey birds, birds of prey, rather. It kills domestic animals. You could lose a cat this way very easily if they decide to eat a mouse that was poisoned. And it is not a pleasant death.
No.
And the treatments, and I believe it's a heavy vitamin treatment, which doesn't always work, is also expensive. So it's not something that every raptor rehabber can do with all animals. So it's a terrible thing. Do not use rat poison.
Isn't that what killed the escaped eagle owl that was loose in Central Park several years ago? And that that died from several things.
I'm not sure. I think it might have been hit by a car.
It wasn't hit by a car. No, I just did an interview on that.
Oh,
It was several rodenticides, several different ones.
Yeah.
And it just fell off a perch into an alleyway. And it had been loose for almost 2 years in Central Park, and everybody was going to see it. It escaped from the zoo there, and it became this huge star. But
rodenticide is bad. I mean, there's no – and I am very – as I said, it's just the hill I'm happy to die on. If you use it, you are killing things beside the rodents. You are making that choice. But here's the thing. If you don't know that, if you just know that this is something I can buy and use and it's very effective.
So get it off the shelves.
If you don't know it,
yep.
you can't make that choice. So I think educating the children to this, who's telling the parents this? The kids, because they read a book. How wonderful is that?
Ka-ching. Anyways, you also have a lot of other information about rescuing raptors and how you need specific training and that children shouldn't just pick up a raptor. First of all, I can attest to that because I picked up a barred owl that was in the middle of 122 in New Salem. Mm-hmm. So I had to run and get it before it got hit by another car.
Yeah.
It was just sitting there. And I didn't think about it. And the first thing that happened was talons went deep mm-hmm. into my arm. I had to go to the hospital afterwards.
Absolutely.
But we got the owl to tufts first. And unfortunately, it died because it had been hit by a car. But there's registered transporters, and people should know that. And there are places to bring. There are rehabbers. Here in Worcester, you can always bring it to the Wild Animal Clinic at Tufts mm-hmm. Veterinary School in Grafton, too. And please don't just leave it out there to die.
No. No.
But there are people involved. And also the Code of Birding Ethics. You laugh. That was important. We got to stop. We're over time. My returning guest tonight, we could talk all day, is Heidi Evi Stempel, prolific writer, who she just can't stop, who has published almost 50 books and numerous short stories and poems, mostly for young readers. And we've been talking about her latest book. It's really good. Snowy Owl Rescue, Raptor Recovery, the first volume in the new series of the Avian Adventures. Heidi, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Can I just do a quick shout out that the illustrator of the amazing cover
and
the interior art is Natasha Donovan, and her art is spectacular.
It's great. You're listening to WICN.
Thank you for having me on.
Oh, always. You're listening to WICN 90.5 FM. This is Inquiry. My name is Mark Lynch. Good night.